Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
European Champions Cup semi-final 2021. La Rochelle beat Leinster by 32 points to 23. Champions Cup final 2022. La Rochelle beat Leinster 24-21 with a last minute try. Champions Cup final 2023. La Rochelle come back from 17-0 down to beat Leinster by a single point, 27-26. You could make an argument that Ronan O'Gara's team are maybe starting to get into Leinster's heads a little bit by now. This Saturday, La Rochelle are coming for them again, this time at the quarterfinal stage, and this time Rog is bringing his men to his hometown to prepare. Welcome to the pod, hey fellas.
Hey Owen, hey Ken.
Hey Owen, how are you?
I'm good, Ken. Good to be back.
Good to see you.
Good to chat to you there. La Rochelle, you heard it right, Ken, will base themselves in Cork. In Cork's five-star Fota Island Hotel and Resort for much of the week. They'll be there from Wednesday and will use the resort's sports centre facilities, weather permitting, the Irish Examiner tells me. And if Will Skelton wants to hop on a train to Dublin for an afternoon and float around town, Simon, in the knowledge that word will get back to the Leinster camp that he's around the place, well,
like Godzilla, just
so
like stamping on buildings.
Yeah, just wandering around Dublin.
They look like giants to you.
Big men.
No mention of whether or not those big men are going to take a trip to Fota Island Wildlife Park while they're in that neck of the woods. But having been at the Wildlife Park last week myself, I can highly recommend it. I'm sure Skelton and Uni Antonio and these lads would have a ball there having a look at the cute little red pandas and all of that. Obviously, there's strictly no feeding or touching the animals, but your rugby players on tour, they know this stuff already. They wouldn't stick their hand in a lion's cage or anything.
One of the best.
I just wanted an excuse to play that Scott Baldwin clip. Shane Horgan and the Irish Independent's chief rugby correspondent Rory O'Connor on the show today to tee that match up for us and to chat about Munster's elimination in Northampton. An illness affected Munster, it is worth pointing out, Simon. I hadn't realised, I hadn't been following the build up to be honest, so I'm watching the match and I did. There was a bit just before half time, I kind of came into it in the middle of the half. And there was a bit just before half time where there was one of these, there's a bit of kick tennis or whatever, and there was, you know, was ball and play time is high for a minute or two before this. But I did look at it going, Jesus, Tadhg Byrne looks fucked. Yeah. What's wrong with him? Like, is this lad not fitting a couple of people behind him as well, beside him as well, a couple of Munster players? Turns out that he ends up doing his press conference and coughing his way through it. Yeah. One of the players got sick on the pitch. It was not a pleasant week for Munster, but it sounds like it.
Yeah, you don't really hear of illness impacting a team for 2 weeks in a row because it hit them before the Cardiff game as well. And yet they played quite well at times. And you want to excuse them how they ended the game, particularly the defending, like the Zeebo and Crowley defending on Hendy for the final Northampton try. And then you also want to weigh it up against Munster's form over the season overall. It's kind of in keeping. They've played 5 European Cup games and won one of them this year. So while they've had bad luck with injuries and illness, they also haven't been great over the course of a season. And this is this performance and result are in keeping with what Munster have done.
Tadhg Byrne himself was brilliant. As it happens, he managed to shake off the effects for 80 minutes anyway. But there were some big performances elsewhere. Gibson Park scored a first half hat-trick of tries. Bundy Aki led Connacht to a Challenge Cup win.
Against it was funny, yeah. And they're probably Ireland's three best players at the moment. I mean, you could throw a few more into the mix, like the likes of Sheehan and D'Arcy Keenan. But certainly in terms of standout performance, they were the three this weekend for the Irish provinces. And I was sort of thinking about the comparison between all three and how long Gibson Park spent. Well, he was just sort of an average super rugby player. Then he came over here as an understudy to Luke McGrath, never mind being the Irish picture. Did that for quite a few years. Was kind of second choice slash 50-50 with Luke McGrath. And then he gets picked by Ireland, and then he just gets better and better and better. And now he's one of the two best scrum halves in the world. Bundy Aki was a bank teller in New Zealand, had sort of given up on his rugby dream. And then he comes over to Connacht, gets better and better and better, is the best number 12 in the world over the last couple of seasons, certainly since sort of the World Cup to this point. And then Tadhg Byrne was rejected by Leinster. And then sort of had to scrabble his way through the rest of his career, built himself up again in Wales, and they get signed by Munster.
Never
and
also give up. Is this better. Your high? This is well, your I motivational
think,
message
I,
for today?
I think players who continue to learn what their strengths and weaknesses are and how to adapt and how to take on the right coaching advice and ignore the wrong coaching advice, by the time you're 28, 29, 30, you could be one of the best players in the world.
So actually, don't give up is your message.
Well, it's more... I mean, Robbie Keane is an example Ken often gives of somebody who was born brilliant, was brilliant as a teenager, but stayed at that level, never really seemed to take any coaching advice on and move to that next level.
6-8 international goals, but continue.
Whereas I just feel these guys could have been nothing players. All three could easily have been nothing players, but learned how to work the system, work themselves, and kind of build and build to the point where Tadhg Byrne might be the smartest forward in the world. Bundy Aki is just the best sort of power centre in the world. And Gibson Park behind DuPont is the best scrum half in the world.
Huge week of live support for World Service members. It really is. Masters preview we're going to have for you tomorrow, I believe. Champions League quarterfinals. Republic of Ireland versus England at the Aviva. A lot of those matches are taking place at the same time. A lot of those events I've just mentioned there. So much going on. It's all happening. And to hear all our coverage, you'll need to be signed up to the World Service on secondcaptains.com. It's only a fiver a month plus VAT. I've also got some very good news for listeners to Episode with Richie Sadler, podcast of the year 2023, according to the aforementioned Irish Examiner. Let's not forget that.
That's his side here. Touch.
There's an air of vulnerability that comes off. Why is that?
Say more about that.
Say more about it. Is that one of your fucking psychotherapist questions?
I think they said you look sexier in real life or something like that, and it made me obviously immediately really uncomfortable.
But I see things. I'd fucking stop everything if I could. I'd stop the chat show. I'd stop the podcast. I'd stop the stand up. I'd stop everything.
The doctor turned around and said something that we would always speak about and has lived with me to this day. And she said, Monday morning when we start this treatment, that's the best day because that's the road to him getting better.
Wow.
And she was right.
Yeah, the last series had so many brilliant moments, as you can hear there, and this series is going to be no different. Give it a try if you haven't done so already. Richie and Killian are back with a new series and a new interview on Wednesday. I'm told this one is an exclusive, it's explosive, and it's going to cause quite a stir when it's released. But I'm not able to name the guest for obvious Mick McCarthy rule reasons until it's in the bag and ready to go on Wednesday.
That applies to other series as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, anything Richie's involved in, yeah. We will keep the identity of our mystery guest mysterious for now. Episode with Richie Sadler is back on Wednesday and free to all wherever you get your podcasts.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You look so good. Fantastic man.
England have been absolutely ripped to shreds.
Here comes Rob Herring with the line of throw for Ireland and the England 10-metre line, far side. The ball is swept back. Here comes Keith Earls, gathers it now. Races inside the 22-metre line. Goes for the corner. Earls, far side of the pitch. Looks to touch it down. In for the try. Far side of the pitch. 22 minutes gone. Keith Earls with the try. Fun over the tail end of the line-out. Across on the far side. Liveliest man in the entire place was the Ireland fella on the wing. His name is Keith Earls.
It's Leinster versus Rog once again this year in the knockout rounds of the European Cup. Will the outcome be any different this time? Rory O'Connor, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Shane Horgan, how are you?
I'm good, excited.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't script this stuff, could you?
Well, if you were, this is exactly what you would script, isn't it? And it's funny, for lots of reasons, watching the game, the La Rochelle game, which was intriguing. It was really, you know, there were some great games at the weekend, and that final kick, you know, of course I wanted sort of, you know, my pal and colleague and ex-teammate Ronan to get through, but I also wanted La Rochelle to get through because I think it's a much more difficult proposition for Leinster, but Leinster need to have this game, and it needs to happen for the tournament. You know, as you said, it's if you are writing it, is what you would want to write. And I think the tournament is much better for this game. I don't think Leinster are better for it, but that's another story.
I was going to say, yeah, you said that Leinster need the game. I mean, I'm sort of thinking they could have done with somebody else taking La Rochelle out and just go on and win. If there's such a thing as a soft Champions Cup.
Yeah, but... Oh, listen, it's more than that now, isn't it? I want the Champions Cup has definitely sort of, you know, lost something from sort of the glory years. So the biggest teams playing in the biggest rivalries is what we need to have to get this back on track. And these two are now the sort of these are the modern day rivalry, sort of bigger than anybody else in the competition, certainly anybody who's left. And there is the layers and layers of you know, Ronan and Munster and Leinster and you know, last year's final in particular. And the fact that, you know, as we said at the end of last year and the start of this year, that anything that Leinster do, unfortunately for them, however they perform, whatever the margin of victory they achieve in any game, none of that really matters. And the only thing that counts is for Leinster, have they the ability to win a European Cup? And do they have the ability to beat La Rochelle in a knockout game? And that is all on the table on Saturday. So here you are, guys. This is the moment of destiny. And these are the type of games and encounters that people pay their money to watch. And I'm massively excited about it. If I was looking at this from a completely one-eyed perspective from Leinster, no, it's not a good draw from Leinster. It's probably the worst draw Leinster could get. But from somebody who loves rugby, you know, loves the sort of romance of this competition and wants it to thrive, it's the only game that could happen.
Yeah, I have to say, as Manny Lippock stood over that kick, I just had a feeling it's destiny. He misses this and Leinster play La Rochelle again. And a bit like
destiny
Ireland...
Destiny or his 65%.
His 65% stats eventually playing out. Yeah, exactly.
But also, do you remember when that came up? I did think, oh, this is... He hasn't gone quite enough... He hasn't... The try scorer hasn't probably gone quite as far around as he might if he was really pushing.
Yeah, if Manny Lippock was my kicker, I would have taken another couple of yards into the
Yeah,
post.
Yeah, I would have been thinking that. So there was that. There was obviously the wind... And, you know, his history as a kicker. But just as he, you know, went down over the ball, there flashed up a 100% kicking in the game so
oh, really?
Far. I thought, oh, no. Yeah, I was like, oh, maybe he will. But I think everybody kind of felt the same way, didn't they? I'm not sure if this is going to happen for him.
Yeah, and just like with Manny Libbock, it's often pressure, as it was for him in the World Cup, for Leinster. Like, it's like Ireland in the World Cup quarterfinals. For Leinster, they couldn't face a bigger mental challenge than Rog and Will Skelton, who, two players, probably have done more damage to Leinster since the start of this competition in all the various clubs they've been with than the rest of the hundreds of players Leinster faced over the years.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, it's such an enduring rivalry now, isn't it? I mean, they've played each other four times in 3 years. You know, and Leinster did get the monkey off their back in La Rochelle, and I think they could quite happily take a soft one, because they could even go back and say, well, we beat them in the pool stages, so we have even ticked that box. So they didn't necessarily need to tick it again, but it does. Like, I do think it's a stronger field this year. I was watching Bordeaux absolutely thrash Saracens and kind of before the Leinster game, and thinking that maybe it's Leinster's misfortune that they may see off La Rochelle and then a new dynasty emerges and just up the road in Bordeaux.
Yeah.
I really think they're contenders, although we're yet to see it. But Skelton, especially against the James Ryan-less Leinster, is a very frightening proposition. But La Rochelle and Leinster are not playing as well as they were last year. And there is a sense that La Rochelle are able to get up for kind of the big finals now, or even the second half and the Stormers, that they were able to rouse themselves. Whether that's going to be enough if Leinster bring what they can bring, say in the second half against the Bulls, that in the Aviva again, where they had to come from 17-0 down in the final, it's a big ask. I was in here last week talking about how hard it would be for Munster to go and win it away from home. Well, La Rochelle have to come back from South Africa. Yes, they're going to Cork, and there's just something about Rog taking them to Cork to prepare for Leinster that's magic.
I don't know what message that's sending me, but Leinster should be scared.
Absolutely. I don't know. He's in their heads already, and it's just that little plant's another. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely something they'll be thinking about. But the challenge of doing that and then performing, having had to come back in a tough game in Cape Town last weekend, it's a very difficult proposition for La Rochelle. And Leinster should be favourites in nearly every kind of facet, because they're fresher, they're staying home, they're probably had a more consistent season, although, as I said, I don't think they've been great, and I don't think they were great last Saturday. So there's probably questions over both teams, and I'm not sure this is going to be as high level as the last couple of meetings, but maybe the two great rivals will bring it out of each other.
Shane, what about Rog?
Rory, how are you possibly making Leinster favourites here? This is... It's impossible to make Leinster favourites.
Well, I think La Rochelle will win the game in my own head, but I think I haven't looked at the bookies, but a home advantage, the fact that La Rochelle have to travel from South Africa, and their own form, there hasn't been a great La Rochelle season, although they do tend to pull it together. I just think that's how Leinster will end up being very marginal favourites in the kind of, if you're just laying it out. But I think in my own head, I think La Rochelle should win the game.
I think given the history between these two sides, and there was the pool game aside, because the pool game this year counts for nothing, in my opinion. Actually, no value. I would say of all the games that have been played between these two sides in the last 3 years, Leinster have been favourites, maybe with the bookies, and certainly with the Leinster followers. And even to such a case, last year, again, Leinster were saying Leinster were the favourites, and I was convinced that La Rochelle were the favourites because of the history. That history has taken another step on from last year. When it's counted, every single time, La Rochelle have beaten Leinster. So I don't know, going into, again, another knockout game where it's all on the line and the pressure exists, and La Rochelle have shown time and time again how good they are at delivering, performances, staying in games, and sort of, counteracting everything that Leinster do. I don't see how Leinster can be favourites going into this game. I just don't see it. And I recognise they're at home, but they're at home for the final. And I recognise La Rochelle don't appear to be playing at the same level that they were during periods last year, but neither are Leinster.
What do you think of Rog bringing them to hang out in Fowde Island for the week?
Yeah, he got married there. I was down there, but I think it was about 20 years ago, maybe more actually, that he got married. It was 20 years ago. Jeez, a long time.
There you go.
But yeah, I didn't realise he's still squeezing Fowde Island. They have the Munster jersey. They have the photograph. They must be crying out for a La Rochelle European Cup jersey as well. Yeah. But I'm sure he's saving them a few bob.
So Leinster, neither team in peak form going into it, Rory. What about Leinster's performance against Leicester? There seemed to be a lack of intensity. Can you put that down to in the back of their heads knowing what challenge was going to be coming up the following week?
Yeah, and I've probably been critical of Leinster probably putting too much into games they didn't need to put stuff into, and then, you know, not having enough on the big days. So I'm reticent to hammer them too much, and I'm sure they saw the Leicester team sheet, and there was no George Martin, there was no Ollie Chesson, there was no Tommy Reffel, and that pack was very diminished, and they probably said, and they knew La Rochelle were coming as well by then, and I think they probably took their eye off the ball to a degree. But I worry about teams being able to switch it on, you know, and being able, you know, if you're as kind of loose as they were in that second half in particular, like they put together some beautiful moments. You know, that break for the first phase move for Joe McCarthy to make the break was so clever and so Leinster, and it looked brilliant, and Jameson Gibson Park was magnificent. Yeah. But in between those great moments, there was a lot of mediocrity. And I just thought, watching in the stadium, it was one of the rare occasions where I wasn't working. I was able to watch the game through kind of a different prism. I think they play fast, but they're not fast themselves. They're quite a slow team. I think they lack pace. And I think that might bite them against the best teams. Because you look at Bordeaux, you look at La Rochelle, you look at even the Bulls, the Stormers. I know Stormers are gone, but even Northampton yesterday, bringing on the young winger Hendy, and he blitzes Munster for two really good individual tries. I'm not sure Leinster have really anyone. I know James Lowe can score tries, but they're lacking that top-end speed. And there were moments where they looked a bit sluggish defensively. I still think they haven't quite figured out what they're doing. Part of it, I think, is probably that there's a plan there for La Rochelle, and they went to La Rochelle in the pool stage with a plan, and they put Will Connors on the flank and had built a game plan, and it worked. But I think James Ryan's a big miss for them this week, and you know, I'm still question marks over Ross Byrne at 10, and I'm not entirely sure they're going to be able to get it done.
Huge question marks over Ross Byrne at 10. And just on this idea that, you know, Nienaber's defence has brought a new shape and a new risk profile to it. So it's different, but is it any more effective than it was last season?
I haven't looked at the numbers, so I can't give you a definitive answer, but certainly it looks like teams are getting through them a little bit easier. Now, maybe they're only doing it in moments, and over the course of 80 minutes, they're getting the results that they want. And he has said, look, there's no defensive system is perfect. But, you know, I think back to when Ulster carved them open. No one's really done that since with their kicking game in behind. But I'm sure Rog has clipped up every little bit of what everyone has done to them. And, he knows the system himself. He's studied, you know, he's a clever man. He's been a defence coach for a period himself. This is where this is the proving ground for it. I mean, I haven't counted the weeks. I mean, I'm sure we're in and around that 14 game now at this stage. And this is what he was building it for, was this week. Basically, you know, we're knockout rugby. This is the testing ground for their season. I think we can judge it much better at the end of this weekend.
Is it on the record or off the record that Leinster are far less worried about, you know, pool games and the early part of the season, and just thinking we need to peak sort of from April on, basically now onwards?
Yeah,
have they said that, or is
it's
it
more a sense, I think, and yeah, a kind of the word. And even I think Jack Conan said something recently after, I think it was the win over the Bulls. You know, I think they have been trying to save, and naturally in the World Cup year as well, where the players had such a massive peak at the start and massive low at the start of the season, to kind of try and just get through the season and then try and peak again at the end of it. That's understandable. And then, you know, watching the Chasing the Sun documentary and the way Razzie and Jacques Nienaber managed South Africa through the pool stage of the World Cup, I think there's definitely been a change of focus there as well. So, but no, they haven't definitely, like, Leo Cullen's just not the kind of person who's going to say, "Ah, look, you know, it's Ebre this week, we're really thinking about next week." That's just not the way they're ever going to talk. But they probably tried to conserve a little bit for this push at the end of the season.
Leinster,
yeah, I agree.
Sorry, Shane, go
agree,
ahead.
But I don't necessarily know if they were kind of holding back in this game against Leicester, and I don't think they should have been. And I think I would much have preferred them to be sort of going into La Rochelle off the back of a, you know, much more clinical, incisive, controlling win. And that is the difficulty with cadence. Listen, there's for years, strength and conditioning coaches have been talking about the cadence of seasons, because you can't just be on the whole time. It's impossible. But the timing for your peak can be tricky as well. And if you're off by a week or a couple of weeks, or, you know, the mentality as a result isn't right, you can find yourself unstuck. So if that is the case, let's hope it is. But it also then increases that pressure on this game against La Rochelle, which will be huge. And I think the sort of pressure and anxiety that comes with playing La Rochelle, I think that was evident in the last few games against them. And that has been, along with the performance of La Rochelle, I think that pressure that's come, whether it be internal or external, that's come has affected the way Leinster have played against them. And if I think back in particular to the early second half of the game last year in the final, where you know the kicking was completely panicked, you know, and talk about, you know, you're meant to kick on your terms, but it was very rarely it was kicked on Leinster's term, and it was kicking away possession in really bad positions to put La Rochelle in very good positions. So listen, we'll see how that unfolds. And the other point, Roy, that you mentioned that it jumped out at me as well, and it's not a slow Leinster team, and it's actually, you know, it's got, you know, speed in different areas, but that top end sprinter pace on the wing doesn't exist. And there was, you know, listen, James Lowe is a phenomenal player, but the ball did come out in that I think it was that first half at one point, and he just didn't have the sort of gas to sort of go, you know, the distance that you'd expect. And there was another opportunity on the right wing as well. Again, just Leinster didn't have that top end pace. I thought about it, and actually Leinster probably haven't had that top end pace, real sprinter pace, since Dennis Hickey. And I did think there was, you know, having that incredible gas, you know, does give everyone on the team a comfort. And I suppose it's the difference between, when talk about sort of, you know, New Zealand and South African sides and their, you know, their talent pool, and then, you know, what Ireland has to do in terms of their talent pool, which is a lot smaller. And we have to sort of stick with players and develop them and, you know, maximise their overall game to make them the best players they can be. And I think Ireland do that brilliantly, and Leinster are doing that, you know, largely at the moment. But, you know, sometimes it's comforting to have that just natural sprinter pace, which actually, if you don't have, you can make yourself faster, but that really top end pace, if you don't have it, you don't have it.
Yeah, Gibson Park is a great example of what that speed does for your game. We watched him at the weekend, and composure is probably his main attribute that other players don't have to the same extent, but his speed kind of gives him options in tight spaces. It gets him out of the wrong option if he does take one. It makes defenders think and worry more and gives more time to the out half, and it gets him tries. And it just, in every moment, it's his speed of thought as well, but in every moment he just has that, it's acceleration and top end speed to just create so many more options.
Yeah, and he seems to be able to think on the go as well. So he arrives at a ruck, very definitive, knows what he's doing next, and he's often ahead of the defence, and he's sometimes ahead of his own attackers, but he runs these cheat lines as well that backed them up, the way he backed up Dan Sheehan on the left wing for what was the second try. He's operating on a level that nobody ever really expected him to get to. I mean, he was available for the 2019 World Cup for Ireland, and he was never even in consideration. It was 4 years he was back up to Luke McGrath at Leinster before, yeah, Andy Farrell's kind of threw him in for Ireland and, well, you know, saw something, gave him an opportunity, and suddenly Leinster, you know, they started him in every big game since, and he is increasingly their most important player, you know, in terms of the way they play, in terms of making them tick. Sure, like Andrew Porter is another, and there's a bit of a doubt over Andrew Porter at the moment. I think he's carrying something. He came off very early at the weekend, and he's a pivotal figure in terms of their physical attributes, but in terms of actually getting Leinster playing the way Leinster do, he's so important. He's become the key man in that whole back line, and he just makes them tick completely, and he's kind of almost taken the mantle. Sexton's almost passed the mantle to Gibson Park.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, rather than like out half to out half. What do you think of that theory, Shane?
I think it's it's very valid. My concern with it is that it does it's not that Leinster are playing super narrow, but I do think that I like to have a very powerful voice further out than 10. And I'm not sure that Leinster have that. And so what you've got is you've got a 9 and a 10 looking sort of slightly more focused on his inside than his outside, which I don't think is necessarily the best way for Leinster to play. But he has been extremely dominant. He seems to, and this is kind of unusual to 10. You think about 10s, you know, say 10 can put tempo into the game. Now, they can, but, you know, you had the tempo is really defined by the ball carrier in the first instance and how the ruck is cleaned out. But somehow he almost inspires better ball carrying and cleaning out. I think it's there because if it's kind of semi, if it's not super fast ball, the fact that he gets it away from the base so quickly just gives that an added impetus. And his trail lines are exceptional. You know, he's fully committed upfield to make sure that, you know, if that line does come through that short ball or they do get around the corner, that he is there. So, and for him to be able to do that And retain those positive lines, but still be able to sort of, if it doesn't go through, to be able to get to the breakdown fast enough to keep that tempo that Leinster need and Ireland need is quite remarkable. And he's got a very, very big engine. People don't speak about that as much either, that all that tempo, the speed of thought, the ability to run those positive lines and pick up the balls, the inside trailing balls that we see now him consistently doing. It takes an enormous engine to be able to do that. And he never really looks tired either. He's not one of these players you think we got to get him off after 60 or even 70 minutes because he's massively flagging. He often, particularly for Leinster, does the full shift.
Yeah, La Rochelle haven't been great in France or in Europe this season, but you just know they're going to turn up for this game. And we talk about Raj and the mental side of it for Leinster and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of styles make fights as well, La Rochelle, as we know, often lose to Toulouse. But with Leinster, Bryce Doolan often neutralises our kicking game, our exit strategy. Then Boddy is like the poach master, probably the best poacher in the world, you could say. Then there's the Skelton, Antonio power and all that sort of stuff. And then their bench power. And all of those things kind of neutralise Leinster in areas where they're strongest.
Yeah. And, you mentioned Skelton before and just the raw size that they're able to bring. And if they get you into a corner, they squeeze and squeeze and squeeze in a way that Irish provinces can't really do. They can at the URC level. They're able to do it to the Welsh regions, but you're going up in class here, and they're missing a couple of bodies. Like Dante had a poor Six Nations, and even on Saturday, I'm not sure if he's at the level that he was at last season. I'm sure Jack Nowell is on one of the wings now, and he's a very good player, but again, he wouldn't be the top end speed that maybe a Raymond Rule would have had, and they've been able to carve open Leinster at moments where they needed to. But Soutini's a really good player. Like, they have excellent players, and you're right, I suppose it's hard to kind of worry about Leinster flicking a switch and turning it on, and then say, oh well, Arshay will definitely flick a switch and turn it on after the week that they've had. But I do have a bit of faith in them as big game players, as a kind of champion team, and knowing the rivalry.
Yeah.
Like these two, like there's a genuine dislike between these two squads and these two managements. And the managements get on okay, but then once the whistle goes, it's the real nature of the relationship comes out. I don't know. There's not a lot of warmth. I think O'Garrett took Leo Cullen out for breakfast in La Rochelle the last time. But
just smile your way through that one.
Yeah. But even the stuff after the game last time with Aldridge accusing James Ryan not making eye contact, all that sort of stuff feeds into it. And like if you listen to the ref mic the last time, Skelton was in James Ryan's ear the whole day, and he's pinning lads on the ground, he's doing all sorts of stuff he shouldn't be doing, but he gets away with it, and that's what makes him as good as he is. So they have the capacity, certainly, but there's doubts over both of them, as I said.
You were at the Munster game, Rory. How debilitating was this bug that went around the Munster camp?
Oh yeah, it was very debilitating. Whatever day I was in here last week, I said that I didn't think Munster were going to win. And then that was before Snyman got ruled out. There was a doubt over Snyman, but he trained the next day. And I was like, okay, well, they get him on board. But
that's odd, right? Because when I saw that, I thought, yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, they brought him in, he trained, and then it just had an adverse reaction. Apparently some of them had it last Saturday against Cardiff as well, the previous week, and it had affected that performance as well. It must be really bad. It's going to rip through them. Like, Tyburn came into the press conference afterwards, and genuinely, he shouldn't have been there, really. He was choking, how far are we out of COVID? He was kind of choking.
Coughing his way through it.
Yeah. We're all kind of moving our phones away from where he was sitting. And I felt really sorry for him. He was actually brilliant. I thought, given what they've been through, they performed quite admirably. They were missing so many players. Craig Casey vomited on the pitch just before the second half began. He was in a bad way, apparently, on the flight over. Snyman had to stay back home. Obviously, the training didn't go very well, and he had to go for further treatment. I think he'd got it worse than everyone else. O'Mahony was
the first to get it.
Possibly, I don't know. I haven't quite gone into the patient zero side of things, but it's so unfortunate. It's a very Munster story, really, to be struck down. They just bring so much drama. Antoine Frisch going to Lakeith during the week and telling them he wants to, go home
to
France.
The timing of that
was really
crazy.
Poor, on the eve of the game. And it was a very typically...
A lack of awareness? Empathy for your situation and your team?
It was a poor judgment, certainly. Yeah, absolutely. It's all those things. And, if a player gave me an interview like that, they can say, look, would you mind just not running that this week? I'm happy for it to run, but maybe do it after we go out of Europe or in a URC week when it's less important. But the impact that had, I'm not sure it was destabilising at all, but it still was just added another layer of drama. But someone told us yesterday that if the game had been on, if they'd had to travel on Tuesday, they wouldn't have been able to take a lot of the players. Right. And it clearly sapped the energy from them to a degree. And what they produced was pretty impressive But I wouldn't blame it either. I think they still made a lot of mistakes that they've been making through this season. And their bench, like our Northampton brought off 8 really, really good players. And Munster were bringing off players who just aren't at that level yet, or have gone past that level, or never will never get to that level. And that's the difference between the teams. And the better team won. I think Northampton have a better chance of winning this competition than Munster, and they probably made hard work of it, really, considering the circumstances.
I was thinking, I'd heard all the news all weekend, particularly just before the game, about the illness and people maybe not being able to play. But I did think, how big of an impact did it have? Of course, Schleiman, I think, that's the fact that he couldn't play is obviously significant, but it's not like they haven't dealt with that over the last 4 years. It's borderline ridiculous at this point, but. How much better could Ty Byrne have played, for example? I thought he was phenomenal. I was just watching the performance. At every crucial moment he was there, and I kind of did make me think. What sort of circumstance would Munster be in without him? He's and I also sort of thinking, is there a better player possibly in the world at the moment than him? I just think he was so good.
Sorry, it's a big call. Best player in the world.
Well, isn't it? Is there a better player?
Well, there probably is one, but he's playing sevens at the moment.
Yeah, well, he's back. He's back.
Yeah,
he's
of course. Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose glamour player aside, is there a player in the forward pack that you would that does more for a team than Tadhg Byrne?
I think he might be one of the most all-round forwards Ireland has ever produced.
Yeah,
and I think it's amazing that he could put in, say, a 9.5 out of 10 performance. Like, take to the field first of all, then put in that performance. And then another guy can't even make the match. It's amazing how, I presume it's the same illness impacting two different people.
They said Steinman had copped it. They were very vague about it. And I think they actually, by bringing the, it's medical information, all that sort of stuff, but they probably could have clarified a little bit further, even off the record, just kind of, it does look a little bit bad for Steinman. You could frame it that, Ty Byrne got up and out of bed and did it, but I think Steinman did cap it worse. I think he was in a much worse way. And look, I don't doubt that Steinman would have played if he could have. I don't think there's any sense within Munster that he made a decision. I think he was quite badly affected by it and wasn't able to travel.
Fair enough. You wrote that Munster are still no closer. I don't think anybody could argue with that. Around a 16 elimination, about the level that they're at for the squad strength that they have?
Yeah, look, they've had a very unlucky season, and this kind of sums up the bad luck that they've had. I mean, losing Jean Klein and Orji Snyman, and then even Odogbo, who's their kind of the next kind of tight head lock, who's a very young player but was playing very well for them. They're missing 4 front rows. John Ryan gets suspended on the eve of the game, and then they try and appeal it, and then they end up picking 3 loose heads, and one of them doesn't come on. It was a particularly unlucky campaign. But at the same time, they mismanaged their pool. Even though they were weakened, they should have beaten Bayonne. They should have won in Exeter. And they probably should have closed it out against Northampton as well. They were all games that they were in winning positions. And then they would have had a home draw. And yes, the illness still would have affected them, but they would have been at Thomond Park. And, that does have an effect. So I think the URC can almost be seen as the last act of the previous team. And we're seeing the development of a new team. We're going to lose apparently Stephen Archer, Dave Kilcoyne, Frisch is probably going to leave, Peter Romani's contemplating leaving, Joey Carberry's gone at the end of the season. There's a lot of players who've been around for a while who are walking away from Munster at this point. They've lost Andrew Conway, they've lost Keith Earls as well, and there's no talk that they're going to replace them with overseas signings, or there's anyone there's no Orji Snyman and Damien Delende coming over the hill either. So I think this is Munster's lot for the time being. And a bit like Ulster, they've kind of got to build it from within, and they've got good players. Jack Reddy didn't have a great day yesterday, but I do firmly believe that he's a very good 10, and there are good players within that squad that will come through, but it might take a while. And I think, even looking at how Connacht and Ulster pitched up in the Challenge Cup, you wonder, would it be, is it better to actually go into that competition and try and win it than go out in the last 16 again? But at the same time, Munster were very competitive in the first half, and if they'd had a couple of bodies, they could have beaten Northampton, but they were missing the bodies, and the illness didn't help. Like, O'Mahony coming off when he did was so weird, but it's so,
and then turns they lose those 2 lineouts after he goes off.
And like, they can't trust their bench, and you can't win this competition. You look at every team in this competition, they all have 23 players, and that's one of the things Leinster, I'm not sure, unless they get a couple of bodies back on deck this week, I'm not sure their bench is strong enough.
Yeah, it could get worse for Munster in the medium term, Shane.
Yeah, I think so. The sort of narrative is or was that it's a rebuilding phase, and they started that rebuilding phase with the with the win last year in the URC. But and so, you know, there's a natural progression that they should be stronger this year, which I think they, you know, you could say that they were and should have done better, and potentially, you know, sickness aside and injuries aside, which have been kind of unique and very, very difficult for them, I think they could have got into certainly a quarterfinal, or potentially even a semi-final, depending on the draw. So that may have happened, but it didn't. But now they're in sort of, the idea that, oh, listen, they're just build and be a better team next year after this year. Well, you know, Rory's just gone through all the names there. That's huge. It's really like it's not just, you know, an evolution. This could be a revolution without a cohort of established overseas players to come in and shore that up. So, you know, you're almost not quite back to square one, but you know, it's not a progression. They're going backwards to go forwards. And that's, I don't mean that in sort of, you know, performance level this year, but in terms of recruitment, it's a very, very difficult position for them to be in. And you know, there is going to be no silver bullet, or the, you know, cavalry aren't coming over the hill. It's, you know, it is having to look internally, promote players, you know, give them game time, and hope that they can, you know, reach the performance level that's needed to be, you know, the kind of level that, you know, Munster expect, because expectations are very high, but there's not a cohort of international, you know, ready-made internationals that are going to come in and drag Munster to success building on this year. There's a lot of work to be done after this year to sort of get them back to even the position that they're in right now.
I just want to make a short point on the sense of luck around Munster in the short term with illness and injury for this game, and just the feeling over quite a few years now. Snyman's the big one, obviously, but Carberry, Zeebo even, the fact that Jean Kleyn declares for South Africa, gets selected for South Africa, Ben Healy goes to Scotland, Frisch now looks like he's going to France. That's a phenomenal list of things that you wouldn't normally expect to happen. Like Snyman, you could do a documentary on Snyman alone. Zeebo, you see the talent of the guy, but also the lack of fitness of the player on the pitch at the weekend. It's a bizarre sequence of events that I just wanted to kind of...
This game
kind of summed up how Munster have done over the last
Years. What do you think?
They've made a ton of mistakes.
What do you think about that qualification Simon's putting in there?
Yeah, it is entirely unique, isn't it? And you wonder, is it just a kind of a series of, you know, individual issues, or is there something bigger here that should have been identified, should have been addressed, and should have been protected against, you know? So, you know, the Frisch issue is, you know, I think very, very disappointing all around. You know, who could have thought Schleiman would have been, you know, such a disaster. The Jean Kleyn thing, again, you know, like, so disappointing given the sort of, where, you know, he was and what he could have been, and I understand his decision making potentially, but then you're left in a really tricky position with Munster. In some ways, I'm sure they didn't want to keep him because of what had happened, but kind of forced into doing it. A player like Joey Carberry, who's, you know, been incredibly sort of disappointing with his injury profile, and, you know, the way he played for Munster during that period. So I'm not sure if it speaks to, a bigger issues that should have been identified and addressed, or if it's just a series of, you know, really unfortunate and sort of bizarre individual occurrences. But, you know, either way, it's cold comfort to Munster, and it puts them in a quite a tricky position, as I said, for next year.
You mentioned how much fun Ulster and Connacht had in the Challenge Cup at the weekend, Rory. Either of those performances stand out for you?
Connacht were very impressive. To go to Poe, who are going quite well in the top 14, I think they're seventh, although they've hit a bit of a rough patch recently, but they still had the profile of a team that an Irish side would struggle with. They were physical, they were big, they had a lot of pace. And they went two scores ahead a couple of times within the game. Bundiaki,
2012 at halftime.
Yeah,
that's a proper deficit.
And Connacht got it back, and they stretched it out again. But I mean, Connacht could really do up Bundyaki playing more games for him. Like, he's very good. I don't know if anyone's seen him, but it's unbelievable the difference that he makes when he's on it, playing in that jersey, and that what he does to the players around him. He just lifts them. Keane Prendergast was sensational. You know, a player that if he gets a good end to the season, I think Andy Farrell likes him, but he's kind of fallen out of favour. He's one who could bridge the gap, and it would be great for Connacht to get more bodies into that squad. And there's a, I question the decision to prioritise this competition over the URC. They rested Aki and gave Finlay Beelan parental leave for the URC game against Benetton, which was a really key game in there if they want to get to the top eight. But they decided to park them and bring them to Poe. And it's paid off, because there is now, they go to Benetton again for their quarterfinal. And even without the lads, they were within 2 minutes of winning that game. And that gets them into a semi-final. And suddenly you're thinking about maybe getting to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for a final on the eve of the Champions Cup final. There's a place for the winner in the Champions Cup next year anyway. But it's also a bit of silverware, you know, for a club that's only ever won one trophy. Mm. And Ulster the same. Like, for Richie Murphy to kind of put a positive spin on his spell. There's no team in this tournament that Ulster in particular should fear. Especially because they've a lot of fit players. You know, they've Henderson, they've got a lot of their players back. They've Kits off for another couple of weeks at least. I think they have more quality. They're on the opposite side of the draw. You could end up with an All-Irish final in that tournament, because there is really nothing there. Like, their worst enemies in this tournament is themselves and their own ability to screw it up, because they have to go away from home. That will be difficult, but they both have a real chance of getting to a final and winning something.
Just briefly on Kitsoff, we were talking about it off air last week, but he has since confirmed that he's leaving, which oddly could be good news.
Oh, I don't know. It gives them more budget, because they're spending something around £750,000 a year on him. And that's what turned his head. He wanted to stay at the Stormers. The Stormers have come into money, and I think it is a deal that suits both parties, because Ulster are in a bit of financial strife, and the Stormers have had investment from Red Deeza, which is actually partly owned by Ardagh Glass, who currently have Johnny Sexton working for them. So there's a lot of Irish interest in the Stormers in terms of financially. You wonder, will Johnny end up having an advisory role over there? But anyway, that's for another day. But they have money to bring him back, and he wants to live there. It makes sense. But like, It's mad that a player can come over for that short a time and want to go back, but it just shows that maybe that he came over for the wrong reasons in the first place, that they sold him a financial package rather than an actual vision of what he could achieve for Ulster. But it means they've a bit more budget maybe to invest in their squad. It might help them keep one or two players that maybe were contemplating leaving. And I think that's going to be a bit like Munster. That's going to be a bit of a homegrown rebuild over the next couple of years.
Fun week ahead, anyway. Yes,
just on that, there's more factors that have to be contemplated now in overseas signings than ever before. Mm. And we've seen them with in Munster in particular. It's not the silver bullet that at one point people thought it was. And I'm not against overseas signings, probably more against them for Leinster at the moment than, you know, any other province. I've seen firsthand the impact that top committed, overseas players have had at Munster and then at Leinster. It's been very, very impactful and affected success as well. But given the sort of more complicated factor is, there is a huge sort of amount of research that has to be done now, and not just about can you secure a guy because you pay them enough money to come over and play in Ireland for potentially a year or up to 4 years, depending on who you're talking about. There's more to it. There has to be kind of, a greater commitment. You have to understand what their position is, if they're sort of a project player, how quickly you can make sure that they are committed, and whether they're going to be a fit in the circumstances. And the circumstances of going to Leinster at the moment are very different than an overseas player going to any of the other provinces, and certainly, sort of Ulster, given the year that they've had. So the due diligence I don't believe is done broadly enough when recruiting, and I think that has to change.
Okay, I think we're all looking forward to next Saturday already. Leinster, La Rochelle, Rory, Shane, thanks a mil.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a million. See you guys.
Ken Burley from Newstalk Dublin, welcome back, Ken.
How you doing? You know that Stephen Ferris is bone on bone in one of his knees.
So what did Wales do? They picked him up and flung him to the ground bodily. It's no way to treat a man in his condition. I mean, we were treated like conditions. We know that we're going to be the same Ireland. We're going to be standing up for what's good for the game. You know, the Welsh performance to me stood for brutality. It stood for cynicism, cold-eyed, remorseless bully. I mean, if that's the game that you guys want to play, I mean, I say you can have your poison cup.
Michael Keevan emails in, "Hey lads, the most eye-catching thing of the coverage of the Leinster game was the age profile of the crowd, which looked to be in their 50s to 60s, judging by what the TV controller showed us anyway. Ken was blathering on about a similar issue in the Premier League."
What?
Actually, to be fair, he doesn't say blathering on, just as Ken was blathering about a similar issue in the Premier
blattering.
League.
Blathering?
Yeah.
I mean, talking about.
Well, yeah. Podcasting, talking, blathering. It's all the one.
Okay.
So Ken was blathering about a similar issue in the Premier League. And there was endless criticism of the Six Nations being too corporate. Has the cost of living crisis made attending sports events a prohibitively expensive pursuit for younger people? Regards from Michael.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
I blathered on during the World Cup about how amazing the Irish fans were and how different the demographic was. A lot of it was people travelling, was younger people living abroad. But we also made the point it was actually cheaper for people to get flights or get trains from wherever they were around Europe and also buy a World Cup ticket than it was to go to a Six Nations game at home in Dublin. Partly because Ireland's so expensive, Dublin's so expensive, but the cost of tickets as well.
And particularly if you need a hotel stay, if you're coming from a part of the country and you might want to stay up for the night in Dublin.
Absolutely. I don't know how people even contemplate it. But of all the different characteristics we threw up about a World Cup fan versus a Six Nations fan, I think the biggest thing was age and just the feeling of the sort of energy and enthusiasm and I suppose just going there with an intention to sing and make noise and have fun as opposed to sit there and watch and stay silent.
I cannot believe you're having a pop at me, Ma.
Why?
She went to her first ever Leinster game on Saturday.
Really? And was she...
There's Simon giving out that she wasn't given it enough.
Yeah.
Enough Leinster chance.
Well, was she?
Probably was. She's quite an enthusiastic person. I'd say when she got there, she got swept up. She did feel the second half lacked a little something. I think reading between the lines, she felt that there was a lack of intensity. Maybe she knew that Leinster knew the bigger tests await this week.
And she'll be back for the Leinster show?
I think she is secretly like, how come Murph's mum gets like all this airtime and stuff? So she's trying to get...
muscle in.
Yeah, trying to muscle in on Francis's territory there. All right, that's it for today. You were going to mention the Munster fans, actually. Just while we're talking about atmospheres and all this kind of stuff, the Munster fans follow their team, Simon, as they have done.
This has been repeated so many times over the years, but it did strike me yet again. What was it, 6,000 fans or something? Whether they came originally from England or over from Limerick and Cork or wherever. But just that connection between the fans and the players and the likes of Zeebo, like almost every other club in Europe would kill for that. And that's the hardest thing to get, that sort of relationship and connection and emotional excitement when those big games come around, particularly in Europe. And yet they don't seem to be able to get the other bits right. It's the bit that every other club wants and can get and Munster have
the
it there.
So,
We're worried about the short and medium term for Munster, and rightly so, with the players and the talent pool and the depth that they have. But while they still have that, they still have a chance to be something special.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you during the week if you sign up to the World Service on secondcaptains.com. You'll hear all episodes without any ads, as I tell you every Monday. And the Second Caps podcast, I should also mention, is part of the Acast Creator Network.
The phone is at me. That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.